The following program, The Russ Belville Show, is intended for responsible adults only. We advocate to the repeal of marijuana prohibition for adults. We discuss the science, culture, and controversy about America's marijuana laws. We do not advocate any illegal activity and encourage all listeners to learn their state and federal marijuana laws. Opinions and claims made by guests and advertisers on The Russ Belville Show are their own, and The Russ Belville Show cannot be held legally responsible for their validity or reliability. Viewer discretion is advised.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it,
and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
From the promise of legalization. To the agony of prohibition.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
Yeah, I hear you had a question for me.
Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
We love it. All right, everybody. Good day, tokers and tokettes. Welcome to the show. I'm Russ Belville. It is Monday, June 18th, 2012, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Thanks for being here for our show. We are putting together things on the fly. As you may have heard on Sunday, we lost our soundboard. It actually died on us, went out on the fritz, and so today we had to get a replacement soundboard, and we just barely got it plugged in, literally like 5 minutes before we got on the air. So thank you for joining us here on the show. We've got Ganja John hanging out on the new station across the way, trying to, it's like sink or swim time, man. We're just throwing you in the water. How you doing, man?
Yeah, we'll see what happens.
There we go. We've also got Wiz Calico and Brian hanging out here as well. And we're going to go to our connection out in Astoria, our Skype connection. I hope Cannabis Carrie's out there. Carrie, can you hear me okay?
I can hear you guys okay. The question is, can you hear me okay?
We do. We got you there just fine. So Carrie brings us our daily Cannabis Chronicles, the latest headlines for what's happening in the cannabis community. So what do we got in the news today, Carrie?
Well, we're going to start the week off with some news of a death this weekend, and I'll tell you how that ties into marijuana. Also, we've got a big story about banks and the difficulty that dispensaries are having working with them. And we're going to cover a raid this week. I'm going to tell you how to get involved if you're in the Southern California area, because, you know, on these protest rests, we need everybody to show up. We need the numbers.
Oh, yes, definitely. And we'll get to that right after this first break. Also on today's show, we're going to be visiting with National Cannabis Coalition's Abhi Sivasalam. He's going to be calling in and talking about the latest research that we're doing on the economics of marijuana. Marijuana prohibition and what we could earn and the money that we could recoup if we were just to legalize marijuana for all adults. And then at the end of the show, we'll have a little bit of a time for a radical rant. We'll talk about what's happening in the cannabis community these days, and we'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. Also, don't forget that today is Roots Monday, so we'll have a Roots Monday Daily Toker Tune for you. That'll be at the 20 after break. We always bring you something from the world of jazz, blues, country, and folk music, the music that made up the music that we're listening to today. So all of that and more is coming up here on the Russ Belville Show on National Cannabis Radio. Thanks for joining us, and stick around. We'll be right back after these messages. Back after these messages from our 420 friendly sponsors. Support these advertisers because their ad money goes straight to the Russ Belville Show. You're tuned into the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
brought to you by the National Cannabis Coalition.
It's simply business. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business. It's simply business. You know why they won't let us grow. It's simply business.
Support the Russ Belville Show. Text the word RUSS to 420-420 and connect with the National Cannabis Coalition. You can also send $10 to the Russ Belville Show right from your smartphone. That's RUSS to 420-420. You're listening to Radical Russ on the Russ Belville Show.
Out of the building, walked through the big building over there. I walked outside and I'm walking over by the lake and I just see everybody casually smoking weed like it's all right. Like it's supposed to be like that.
Because it is all right.
Like you ain't got to worry about no police coming and asking you what you're smoking or what are you doing here or let me see your driver's license. See, that's how they do it in Amsterdam. Everybody's just out there chilling. Ain't nobody stressing. You go buy your weed at the shop. You go kick it, smoke your weed, walk the street, do whatever you want to, and you don't even...
Marijuana is not going to re-legalize itself. You've got to do your part. Join the National Cannabis Coalition today at nationalcannabiscoalition.com. Medical marijuana, industrial hemp, ganja sacrament, consumer cannabis... The topic of marijuana is heating up the news, and the Russ Belville Show catches you up with today's latest headlines. Now, here's our senior news editor, Cannabis Carrie, with the Daily Cannabis Chronicle.
We learned about the death of Rodney King this weekend. King was beaten by police officers, and that was taped by a citizen witness. The acquittal on assault charges for the officers were what sparked the deadly L.A. riots back in 1992. King had led a complicated life after the traumatic beating. He was often the focus of media attention when he had subsequent run-ins with the law. King died early Sunday morning when he was found at the bottom of a swimming pool. Rodney King was 47 years old. The cause of death will not be made public until they are done doing toxicology test, and that could take another 6 to 8 weeks. The police are so far suspecting that it was an accidental drowning, but they need to determine if he suffered any undiagnosed medical conditions that caused him to lose consciousness, like a heart attack or heart disease, and also the amount of alcohol that he had in his system, and if he was under the influence of any other drugs at the time of his death. There were no outward signs of trauma, no blood in or near the pool, but investigators are looking into reports by a next-door neighbor who said she heard King in his backyard sobbing uncontrollably shortly before she heard a splash. His girlfriend reported that King had been drinking alcohol and smoking marijuana for hours before he was found dead. King had a very public struggle with drugs and alcohol. He called himself a recovering addict, but he had never really stopped drinking. It was being reported that Rodney King did have a doctor's recommendation for medical marijuana, and today, sure enough, police were seen confiscating his marijuana plants as well as some gardening equipment from Rodney King's home. Sadly, most of the headlines surrounding King's death said just that, King drinking and smoking weed before drowning. A very sad ending to one of modern history's most notorious victims.
Yeah, it's a interesting story there, and our condolences go out to the family of Rodney King, who, you know, of course, loved him very much, and as would any family. And you know, the Rodney King story is quite a story in American history, and for this to come down to him being sullied as being someone who got drunk and high and then, you know, had an accident or something is really a shame that they'd want to focus on that. We do know that when you use marijuana and alcohol together, that they exacerbate one another. The marijuana can make the alcohol more serious, and the alcohol can make the marijuana more intoxicating. So this can be a problem that may have contributed to the situation. But until we get more information, you know, I don't know that we can really say one way or another what caused Rodney King's death. I just hope that they don't try to put this on the marijuana alone.
Credit card transactions are vital to businesses today. If consumers aren't using a traditional credit card, they're often using their debit cards in place of checks, a transaction that is also dependent on businesses to be able to process credit cards. The Medical Marijuana Business Daily, a trade website that covers all things marijuana business, is reporting that the main national company that handles credit card processing services, Electronic Merchant Systems, will no longer accept Visa and MasterCard transactions from dispensaries. Now, this change will be effective on July 1st. Electronic Merchant Systems is the largest contractor in the nation for processing credit cards. We have learned that they sent out an email to their merchants who have a medical marijuana business telling them that they have changed their policy and will no longer process any Visa or MasterCard payments for them. They did tell their clients that they can still keep and lease their equipment since they will still take Discover cards, but asked that any medical marijuana merchants batch and settle any Visa and MasterCard transactions they have by June 30th. We have been reporting for years on the difficulty for medical marijuana businesses to do traditional banking. This latest development will be a big blow to the companies that would rather not have piles of cash to do their businesses. American Express had already cut the industry off last year. With Visa and MasterCard out of the picture, most of the industry will be forced to operate on an all-cash business model. Now, there are some dispensaries that are trying to work out banking and credit card processing through their smaller and local banks, and many have offered vague or even misleading descriptions of what their businesses actually do just to accept those cards. The medical marijuana dispensaries are trying to scramble to get workaround plans, such as on-site ATMs. Michael Rupulfus, who works with medical marijuana companies to help them find payment processing services, tells those in the industry to be careful signing up for new merchant accounts. It has claims that they will still process your credit card payments. He says that you should make sure that the words medical marijuana dispensary is listed as the business type on the application and that they have marijuana listed as a product, since less reputable merchant card services may try to misidentify the types of businesses to obtain the accounts. Working with cash only is troublesome for dispensaries that have to take into account their own security and now that of their patients who will be coming in the door with a pocket full of cash. We will be taking a more in-depth look into business stories like this one with the addition of a business expert here on the Russ Belville Show. More on that edition and hopefully a few more coming up in the next few weeks right here on National Cannabis Radio.
And we see the situation is pretty clear. They just don't want us to be doing legitimate business. They don't want it to be safe and hassle-free. They want it to be as troublesome as possible. And of course, it all goes down to that federal prohibition, that Schedule I prohibition. You know, Visa and MasterCard are going to hide behind the law. They're going to say, oh, well, we don't want to, you know, be hauled into court for helping out with money laundering transactions or the trafficking of illegal Schedule I drugs. But really, this is, you know, putting the screws to the industry because it's well run, it's successful, it's building political power, it's beginning to change the laws. That's what they're coming after this for. That's why the Obama administration has taken these tactics, not the, you know, well, they're still doing the smash and grabs, but they're also doing this more insidious way of hurting us, you know, nickel and diming us, hurting us in every way. In wartime, they would call this cutting off the supply lines, right? This is classic Sun Tzu art of war stuff, to try to defeat your enemy, to try to isolate us, to make us so that when we do business, we have to do it in a cash-only basis. And of course, cash-only businesses are more likely to be robbed. And then when the dispensary is robbed, they can go, oh, see, we told you medical marijuana dispensaries are likely to get robbed. They're likely to be really dangerous. Yeah, because you won't let us run our businesses like anybody else would run their business, with merchant services, with banking services, and so forth. It's just something that we cannot tolerate, and you know, we need to be treated like any other business out there, and we will keep fighting to ensure that that eventually happens.
Now, we have been covering the raids and closures of some well-known and well-respected California medical marijuana dispensaries in the last few months and the first few weeks of the Russ Belville Show. And for those of you in Southern California, you're going to get your chance to protest with fellow activists this Wednesday in front of the federal building in Sacramento. Last week, we covered the raids and closure of the El Camino Wellness Center after serving thousands of medical marijuana patients since 2008 and giving thousands of dollars to local charities. They were the one dispensary in town that conducted tours for police and city council members alike. Chris Hermes, a spokesman for the Americans for Safe Access, is organizing that protest. It's going to start at 1:30 p.m. on Wednesday. More than 50 localities in the state of California, including the city of Sacramento, have adopted ordinances regulating medical marijuana dispensaries. Hermes wants to send the message to the feds that local and state governments must be allowed to develop, implement, and enforce their own public health laws without interference from the federal government. Hermes accuses the Obama administration of betraying patients and lying to the public about their policies. Earlier this month, Attorney General Eric Holder told members of the House Judiciary Committee that, quote, "We limit our enforcement efforts to those individuals, organizations that are acting out of conformity with state law," unquote. Now, by all accounts, the El Camino Wellness Center was acting in full conformity with local and state laws. Sacramento has been hit hard by the dispensary closures, despite its attempt to regulate the medical marijuana industry and despite the attempt of the blessing from the city council and mayor. As a result of the threatening letters, almost all of the nearly 100 dispensaries that once operated in unincorporated Sacramento County have been closed. Now, in the city of Sacramento, there are 18 dispensaries remaining of the original 34 that had been permitted through the city, and many of those that are left have already received threatening letters, like the one El Camino Wellness Center got 8 months ago. It is, again, one of the largest, well-connected, and public dispensaries that, from all accounts, was the model of what a well-run, well-regulated dispensary would look like. So please attend this protest if you are in the area. Again, that rally to protest the June 11th DEA raids on the El Camino Wellness Center, along with widespread federal intimidation, will take place this Wednesday, June 20th at 1:30 p.m. in front of the U.S. Federal Courthouse in Sacramento. That's 501, I think it's I Street. It might be First Street, but I do believe it's I Street in Sacramento. You can look that up, the U.S. Federal Courthouse there in Sacramento. I hope you guys can show up.
Well, excellent news on the protest being put forward this Wednesday. We hope everyone gets involved with that. But here we go once again, shutting down dispensaries, as if that traffic, as if that business is just going to go away. For every dispensary you shut down, there is a small-time dealer who is cheering. There is a guy who is wants to work underground, wants to go back to bringing those prices back up to their black market best. You're making them happy. You're making Mexican drug traffickers happy. The further away we get from a well-regulated dispensary issue, the more they like it, the more prohibition wins. And it just seems clear to me now that that's the goal of the authorities, of the federal authorities here, is that marijuana is becoming more accepted. We have more than 50% of the people supporting its legalization at this point. They need it to be scary again. They need it to be something to frighten the children again. And they're going to do everything they can to try to make this industry look dangerous to the general public. And when we go and follow the law and have well-run dispensaries and pay taxes, why, that just makes marijuana and marijuana business look good. And they can't have that now, can they? So they're doing everything they can to try to shut this industry down, shut down our banking, shut down our checking, shut down our credit card processing, zone us out of existence, ban us in some cities. It's not going to work. We're not going anywhere. You cannot legalize the right of people to use marijuana as medicine and then try to illegalize all of the ways they might access it aside from the weed fairy. You've got to be responsible here and start to recognize that we're not going anywhere and that you need to do your jobs as regulators, as legislators, to come up with a well-run system that works well for everybody. Now, I understand that there's been some people have taken an inch and, gone a mile with it in some cases, maybe abused the lack of really strict regulations. But that is not the fault of the people that are abusing it. It's the fault of the people for not putting some clear guidelines up in the first place. People are always going to take, especially in business, going to take advantage of every loophole, every technicality they can. So if you leave the door wide open, it's no surprise that they did so. This falls in the lap of all of these localities, all of these counties in California that have refused to come up with any sort of guidelines, refused to find some way of working with the people in the industry to come up with a legitimate way of running these dispensaries. And in other news, we just want to remind you of our schedule coming up. We are headed to the High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco this weekend on the 23rd and 24th. Saturday and Sunday, we'll be bringing you live coverage from noon until 10 o'clock p.m. We'll have all sorts of interviews. We're going to be running around, checking out the booths, getting some video for you to stream in. And we've made some technology upgrades so we don't have to run around with the laptop anymore and get that grainy stream. Instead, we've got these little bloggy cameras that we can go around with and we can get the footage first and then bring it to you later. So you'll want to check it out this weekend from noon to 10 o'clock at ncr420.com right here on National Cannabis Radio, our live coverage of the 2012 High Times Medical Cannabis Cup in San Francisco, or actually Richmond, California. But regardless, we'll be in the Bay Area. We'll be having a ton of fun. Rolla J will be there. The whole crew will be there. We want to see you there online. Make sure that you join us.
It's 420 back in Idaho, where Russ and Carrie were born. So we have to go connect with our roots. You know what I mean? Please support these sponsors who support the Russ Belville Show.
Oh, have you ever met that funny reefer man? A reefer man. Have you ever met
that funny reefer man? All right, folks, when we come back, we're going to have your Roots Monday Daily Toker tune and then an interview with Adi Sivasalam from National Cannabis Coalition. Stick around, it's the Russ Belville Show.
Talking to that reefer man.
The law offices of Omar Figueroa would like to remind you to stand up for your rights. Please do not give up your precious liberties. There's nothing wrong with standing up for our constitutional rights, and in fact, it's the only way to honor the Constitution that recognizes our natural rights. Treat law enforcement with respect and respect the Constitution by standing up for your rights. If you are detained or arrested, stand up for your rights by repeating, I respectfully invoke all my legal and constitutional rights. I do not consent to any search and seizure. I want to remain silent, and I want to speak to my attorney, Omar Figueroa. Omar Figueroa has more than a decade of experience in federal and California courts and graduated from Yale University, Stanford Law School, and Trial Lawyers College. Please contact the law offices of Omar Figueroa at 415-489-0420 or 707-829-0215 or on the web at www.omarfigueroa.com.
The Russ Belville Show. Chat is for friends 18 and older. We expect our chat to be civil, mature, and free from excessive profanity. If you don't like these rules, there are approximately 6 billion other chat rooms with lower standards that you can visit. Everyone knows music and marijuana go together, so let's wind up our 20 after break with the Russ Belville Show's Daily Toker Tunes, the best in pod-safe 420 music from around the web. Today is Roots Monday, featuring the blues, country, folk, and jazz music that birthed the modern sounds we enjoy today. You can get downloads and more information about all our Daily Toker Tunes by visiting music.radicalrust.com. Now, sit back and enjoy your Daily Toker Tunes.
Folks, here's a story about...
All right, we've got a great Daily Toker Tune for today, and I figured, you know, with the announcement of the death of Rodney King, that we would dig into the Chief Greenbud archive for today's tune, because, of course, the most famous quote that you got from Rodney King during the whole Los Angeles riots, I remember when they happened, I remember watching him. I actually had a gig that night. I was playing in a bar watching the Bronco chase on the TV in the bar while I was playing. And, of course, the famous thing that Rodney King said when being interviewed about the whole thing was, why can't we all get along? Why can't we all get along? So in honor of that, I've decided to bring up this tune from Chief Greenbud, Why Can't We All Get Along? This is the Chief on Russ Belville.
There's fighting all over the earth. I think it's really absurd. Iraq and Iran, Afghanistan, places that I've never heard. I know how to make it all end. It's simple, if we all were just friends. Listen to me, smoke lots of weed, and we won't even have to pretend. Why can't we all get a bone? If we're high, then we'll all get along. No fighting nor screaming or foolish mistreating. Really don't think that I'm wrong. Why can't we all get along? They're putting my brothers in jail. Why
Why don't they just use a cross and some nails? I can't believe that we're wrong, and that's where we belong, just because we choose to inhale. Why can't we all get a bone? If we're high, then we'll all get along. No fighting or screaming or foolish mistreating. Really don't think that I'm wrong. Why can't we all get a bone? Why can't we all get a bone? Get high, sing Chief Greenwood songs. They'll be laughing and joking, lots of dope smoking. Really don't think that I'm wrong. Why can't we all get a bone? They'll be laughing and joking, lots of dope smoking. Really don't think that I'm wrong. Why can't we all get a bone? Why can't we all get a bone?
As High Times senior cultivation editor, I'm often called into the field and asked to sample or even identify exotic strains of marijuana in their natural habitat. Now, for the first time, I've compiled more than 120 of my favorite strains into this single field guide designed to fit into your pocket as you travel the world in search of your favorite plant. From a friend's closet grow room to the wilds of Northern California, this single guide covers all of today's best-known strains, plus heirlooms and throwbacks, including High Times quality photos and information on each variety's genetic heritage and growing characteristics, plus my personal notes on aroma, flavor, and potency. So this is Danny Danko, author of the official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains, wishing you good times and great ganja.
The official High Times Field Guide to Marijuana Strains is available at hightimes.com and finer bookstores.
Attention, national cannabis radio listeners. If you haven't heard the political pontifications of Lively and Mr. Libra on the Libra Lounge yet, be sure to visit here Wednesday nights at 6 Pacific, or visit thelibralounge.com for archives and links to download current episodes. Be a lounger.
The Libra Lounge.
Activism begins with ACT. The Russ Belleville Show features the stories of hardworking grassroots activists working for an end to prohibition in today's activist agenda.
Welcome back, everybody. It's half past here, and we're glad to have our next guest on in our debut, official debut week. For our new sponsor is the National Cannabis Coalition, and joining us by telephone is Avi Sivasalam. Avi, how you doing?
Not bad. About yourself?
Oh, good. I'm glad you're able to hear us out there. And, you know, I'm really excited for us to be a part of National Cannabis Coalition, because it seems to me like this is, you know, this brand new organization formed in the 21st century and is taking kind of a new high-tech 21st century science and reason approach to ending adult marijuana prohibition. Can you tell us what is your capacity with the National Cannabis Coalition? What are you doing for the org?
Sure. I'm the director of research for NCC, and my principal role in that in this organization is to develop a research platform, research agenda, and help drive a more activist grassroots approach to legal cannabis. So specifically right now, I'm working with Dr. Maya, who's an economist affiliated with Harvard University, to develop a series of economic impact analyses that will estimate marijuana will do for state budgets under various institutional, you know, settings like the tax schemas and whatnot. And so we just finished up a paper for Missouri that estimated that the total budgetary impact, that is the impact on expenditures from the state government as well as impact on tax revenue that's brought into the state government for Missouri, is something like $100 million.
Wow.
And I would plan to replicate that study for the time being, with the partnership for the state of talent, the state of ability, and we plan to move on to other research as well.
Mm, all right. So you mentioned that you're working with Dr. Jeffrey Myron, the Harvard researcher. People will recognize his name if they've followed marijuana reform for a while. Back in 2005, he issued a paper, The Budgetary Implications of Marijuana Prohibition. Is this just an update to that paper, or is there new information we didn't get from the previous research?
This is an update. In a lot of ways, the data set that were used in the previous paper were out of date. Those data sets, the 2005 paper relied on data sets that were at that point a decade old already. So in a lot of ways, this is an update. We also have a companion paper coming out that is novel in the sense that it allows us to estimate the effects of on the budget with different types of tax parameters. So the Myron paper in 2005 assumes that marijuana will be taxed like alcohol, the stock is an excise tax. About a third. So it sets at a very specific tax rate. And our model, our companion paper model, allows us to see, there's an initiative going on in Colorado right now. Given that specific initiative and given the most up-to-date data we have on usage rates and price rates and all that, what would be the actual, budgetary impact in terms of tax revenue? So in part, it's an update, and we are including some new information into the models that we use.
You gave us some figures for Missouri. Do you have any national figures yet or for other states that we can report?
We don't have national figures yet that we're ready to report. Like I said, we only have the Missouri breakdown now that's complete. And I should note that budget breakdown of $100 million is part expenditure, that is part savings that the government could realize. State government could realize if we cut down on our law enforcement expenditures, our penal expenditures, and our judiciary expenditures, and the other part is the tax revenue. I want to stress that the tax revenue, which is about $50 million, in Missouri it's about a 50-50 split, where you have $50 million in coming from expenditure cuts and $50 million coming from tax revenues. And I want to emphasize that $50 million in expenditures, people might look at that and say, hey, that's $50 million in expenditures, but that isn't all just going to go away. These aren't politically solvable. We can't just fire, X percent of police officers or close that X percent of prisons and all that. And I really want to emphasize that may be true, but the notion that we're trying to impress on people is that we're still restoring $50 million of value. And even if all of that value isn't capitalized in the budget, that still is $50 million of resources, scarce law enforcement resources that can be redirected towards thwarting, capturing, trying, incarcerating, and rehabilitating thieves or other more violent or serious criminal offenders. And those are still scarce resources that are able to be re-diverted.
Mm. Yeah, we're speaking with Abhi Sivasalam, who's the director of research for the National Cannabis Coalition. You can find out more at nationalcannabiscoalition.com, or the easy one is ncc420.com. And I'm glad you brought that up about the redirection of the police resources, because that was one of the early criticisms from the prohibitionists, is we would say, well, you're going to save X million or X billion, whatever the number is. You're going to save X from not having to arrest all these marijuana people. And they'll say, well, yeah, but the way bureaucracies work, a budget is not like that just goes away. They'll just be using that money for other purposes. And I'm like, oh, like catching real criminals, maybe?
sure. There's other research out there. The RAND Corporation has some research on the link between marijuana legality and centers of marijuana sales and crime rates. And there's no positive relationship between marijuana legality and crime rates. In some instances, I think RAND specifically has seen a negative correlation. Mm-hmm. So, there's no notion that legalizing marijuana is going to increase, open the floodgates to violent crime. If anything, the level of violent crime already exists, have more resources to tackle.
One of the other aspects of this prohibition research that gets debated a lot in the news here between the prohibition side and our side has to do with the impact of the marijuana market on the overall market for these Mexican drug trafficking organizations. When it was first revealed, I believe it was the DEA or someone, I know even Hillary Clinton, as Secretary of State, were calling up this 60% figure, that marijuana accounted for 60% of these Mexican drug trafficking organizations. And then once we seized on that and said, yeah, let's cut them by 60% by legalizing it, suddenly that number declined. Suddenly, oh, marijuana really wasn't that big of a deal to the Mexican drug trafficking organizations. Do you have any real numbers on, if we legalize nationally, how much would we harm the Mexican DTOs?
You know, these cartels don't pay taxes, and they don't have accountants that publish their books publicly. So it's really hard to tell. I think the range is really wide, and like you said, the range has seemed to decrease since the prohibition has seized on these numbers. I think the most rigorous work on the topic has been done by the people at the RAND Corporation. The methodology is, I think, a little too intensive to talk about in the course of a 10-minute interview, but the most intensive research I've seen is done by the RAND Corporation, and that figure is close to 15%, 15-20%,
mm-hmm.
which is still a sizable chunk. You know, people, I think I hear these arguments sometimes where I've actually bandied around this $100 million figure for the Missouri budget, and people are like, well, it's only $100 million. But it's not just about absolute explicit dollars. It's also about opportunity costs. You know, $100 million is enough to substantially increase the amount of state pro-people spending on K-12 education. It's enough to, pay for X amount of scholarships for higher education, and so on and so forth. And I think the same kind of logic can be applied here to the Mexican cartels. It's that, 20% may not kill them, but 20% is substantial. You know,
yeah.
20%... substantially cuts into their potential activities.
Right. When I had the chance to debate Dr. Kevin Sabet on this, and he said it wouldn't be very much of their, wouldn't cut them very much, I'm like, well, let's cut them any way we can. Let's take away,
right.
Why give them any business? That makes no sense to me. There we go. Abhi, another area that I would love to see more research in, and I think is the hidden gem in the prohibition argument, is on industrial hemp. Do you have any data on the potential of an industrial hemp market in America?
We aren't quite done with that research. That's actually the next set of papers that we plan on releasing. As you alluded, we're really focused in NCC into developing a solid research platform back to the community, because it's often hard for the actors on the ground to actually know what the right information is. And there's a lot of, talking back and forth. It's not really clear how much of that is accurate. So we're trying to cut right to the point and produce the sharpest, most cogent research possible. The next set of papers we're going to release are the hemp papers. I will say that the hemp market may not be quite as large as some activists say it is. And part of the reason is that a lot of the historical estimates about the size of the hemp market has been based on international contracts,
mm-hmm.
And the international markets that people experience. But those international markets are propped up by subsidies in a lot of cases. So we can look to the French or, other European countries that never legalized hemp and say, well, this is how big their market is. But that market is propped up by subsidies, and it's not clear what kind of subsidies we would enjoy here in the United States to determine exactly how big the market is. So it's not clear that the market is actually going to be as big as some proponents claim it is.
Mm-hmm.
But again, it's the same kind of logic that this is a product, even if it's not, this multi-trillion dollar product, it's still a product that we're preventing from reaching the market that, some consumers value and probably value into the billions.
Mm-hmm. I often think... Oh, go ahead, Abhi. I'm sorry.
No, I was just going to say, I would love to, come back and follow up on, with you on the actual data we have and the conclusions in the hemp paper. But I think we'll probably, be another month before we release that information.
All right. We'll be here. We'd love to hear more of that information. We're speaking with Abhi
Sivasalam
from National Cannabis Coalition, a director of research. You can find more information at ncc420.com or nationalcannabiscoalition.com. And, I'm glad you mentioned that about the how supporters have been pushing these numbers for hemp. Here in Oregon, for example, one particular supporter says $300 million. It'd be a $300 million industry. Kind of number came out of the department of my ass, I guess. But so I think this is so important that we're getting good, reliable research, because we lose a bit of credibility if we go out there spouting, you know, hemp can save the world and it'll take, you know, it'll relieve every problem that we've got, when reality is a lot trickier than that. And to that end, Abhi, I'm wondering, what are some of the, I guess, opportunity costs or some of the hidden variables that people aren't taking into account when they're trying to figure out what a hemp economy would be like? I mean, one thing I can think of is that planting hemp on a field means you're not planting something else. And maybe there's a subsidy on that something else that makes it more profitable. What are some of the things like that that people might think about?
I mean, that's really the primary consideration, right? A lot of the more nuanced considerations are really just things that individuals have to make up their minds on. But, you suggested one thing, was their opportunity cost. You know, if I plant hemp and I can't find corn, and then corn, as you know, is heavily subsidized in the United States, there's a lot of lobbying dollars going into it and whatnot, which makes the opportunity cost for planting hemp quite expensive in some areas. That's true, but it's also, you know, state-by-state basis. So some states, it may be more profitable to plant hemp than others. Our preliminary research suggests that for historical reasons, for reasons that have to do with the composition of plants planted in the various states, the states that used to be the prime producers of hemp in prohibition time are going to continue to be in a post-prohibition era the big dogs in the hemp industry, it appears to us. That's absolutely a part of the opportunity cost. It's not just subsidies for hemp that matter. It's also subsidies for the other crops that are competitors of hemp. And that's, certainly a big factor. And it's really important to, spell that out, because I think historically, I don't want to, call out any particular campaigns, but historically the marijuana activist movement has been hurt, I think, by making outlandish claims that haven't been substantiated. And that really throws into question our credibility on, every issue that we talk about. So it's really important to, to the core of the issue, even if these benefits aren't astronomical, and emphasize that, they're still meaningful on the margins and you should still be fighting for them.
Absolutely. And so far, all of the research that we've been discussing here has been of an economic nature, the benefits of ending prohibition or how much money we'd make from hemp and so forth. Other topics that you're going to be covering in your research, perhaps the medical uses or any research on the arrests or criminal justice, anything else we have to look forward to?
We are looking into a few other areas. Specifically, we are looking into environmental impact further down the road, perhaps after the hemp papers. We're taking this kind of, one set of papers at a time. We are doing a concurrent piece right now with working with Radley Balco to investigate, more intimately, exactly what kind of law enforcement resources we're expending. For example, we're interested in finding out how many SWAT raids are perpetrated in each state for marijuana each year. Just trying to actually get some concrete statistics of exactly what kind of enforcement we're actually doing for marijuana.
Abhi, there's so much to look forward to in these reports, and we can't wait for all of these papers to come out. And I'm sure once they do, we'll have you back on again to tell us what the latest data are, because we're all about science and reason here at Russ Belville Show.
Wonderful. Well, thanks for having me.
Hey, you're very welcome. Thank you for joining us here on the Russ Belville Show. We'll have you back again. Abhi Sivasalam from the National Cannabis Coalition, handling he's the director of research for NCC. You can check us out at ncc420.com. We're going to take a short break, and when we come back, have a little bit of time for some radical rant. Stay tuned. You're watching the Russ Belville Show here on National Cannabis Radio.
Nation.
Marijuana and alcohol are the two most popular recreational drugs in America. Marijuana smoking is non-toxic, relatively safe, and has a low risk of dependence. Alcohol drinking is potentially fatal, dangerous to society, and is quite addictive. Marijuana is safer, so why are we driving people to drink? That's the question of the new book, Marijuana is Safer, So Why Are We Driving People to Drink? By Paul Armentano, Mason Tvert, and Steve Fox. Visit Amazon.com or ChelseaGreen.com today to order your copy of Marijuana is Safer, or visit MarijuanaIsSafer.com.
Hey, this is Willie Nelson for Norman. And if you're one of the 26 million Americans who smoked marijuana last year, you need to get involved in the drive to legalize marijuana. We need your help to stop the senseless arrests of more than 800,000 Americans each year on marijuana charges. Together, we can end marijuana prohibition and stop the arrests of marijuana smokers. To learn what you can do to help, contact Normal at norml.org or call toll-free 888-67-NORMAL.
You want answers?
I'm as mad as hell, and I'm not going to take this anymore.
You want answers?
You have offended my family.
I think I'm entitled.
You want answers?
I want the truth.
And you have offended Shaolin Temple.
You can't handle the truth.
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious, and don't call me Shirley.
Radical rant.
Well, welcome back, everybody. We are just getting set up here in the studio and having a little bit of problems with some of the connections and the switches, so pardon me while I switch out a couple of things. But welcome back. Time for a little bit of a radical rant and kind of continuing an idea that I brought forth on a previous show, and that is getting serious about this fight to legalize marijuana. We are in a drug war. They keep telling us war on drugs, or as I keep saying, war on certain American citizens using non-pharmaceutical, non-alcoholic, tobacco-free drugs. But regardless, it's a war. And I kind of mentioned that book by Sun Tzu, the ancient Chinese warrior, The Art of War. And there's a lot to be learned in that when we're talking about political campaigns in general and this fight to legalize marijuana specifically. And one of the things that is listed in The Art of War is know thine enemy, to know who it is that you're trying to fight, and to remember that your enemy is not a bad guy in his mind, right? Your enemy does what he does because he believes it is right, honest, just, and true. So when we look at the drug warriors and we evaluate what they're doing, you have to remember that what they're doing it because they believe this is what's best for the country. They believe that drugs are really harmful. They believe that marijuana is one of those drugs, and that if we don't try to stop people from doing it, bad things will happen to the nation, to the economy, to the business, to the schools, to whatever it is that they might be talking about. So keep that in mind when we're dealing with the prohibition movement, when we're dealing with these parents groups, to avoid trying to demonize them or to take their opinions as if they are cartoon character malevolent villains of some sort, twisting their mustaches, trying to see how they can put hippies behind bars. Because really, while there is some of that racism and there is some of that that prejudice against people who are different, a lot of this really comes down to cops and prosecutors and lawyers believing they're doing the right thing. So what we need to do to approach this is to remember that when we're speaking to them, to value their opinions, to recognize what they're saying, and to recognize where they're coming from is a place of trying to do the right thing, trying to be good. And in trying to convince them to change their ways, there's a lot of things psychologically to consider. It's one thing to be right. It's another thing to be persuasive. You can be very, very correct in what you're saying. And I know most of the people out there listening to me know that prohibition needs to end. You know that marijuana is the safest therapeutically active substance known to man. You know the benefits of industrial hemp. Yada, yada, yada. You've been watching for long enough. You should be able to rattle these things off very, very quickly. But being right about the subject does not necessarily make you persuasive about the subject. It reminds me of when I went to Atlanta last year. And at the state capitol, there was a young man there who was in hospital scrubs, the pants and the shirt, right? The little scrub tops and scrub bottoms. Obviously worked in the medical field. I believe he was a male nurse or a nurse's assistant or something along that line, orderly, whatever you call him. But it worked in the hospital fields. And he was there in his scrubs, which I thought was great, but he was also wearing one of those Guy Fawkes anonymous masks, right? Okay, now that's one thing in and of itself, but understand that for a lot of people who would, if he got seen on the national, or if he got seen on the Atlanta news that night, or if there was a picture snapped of him, for a lot of people that would frighten them away from hearing his message, because they would conflate it with being part of Occupy, or being part of Anonymous, or being part of anarchists. And maybe he was, maybe he wasn't, maybe that's valid, maybe it isn't. That's not my point. My point is, trying to get across to the soccer moms, trying to get across to the unconverted, that mask puts a barrier between you and the person you're trying to speak with. And then to add on top of that, his demeanor was very aggressive and in your face. It was very, you're wrong about marijuana, you're wrong about prohibition, you personally are doing something evil to me, and I'm here to tell you how wrong you are. Well, you can imagine how persuasive that is to most people. Most people's beliefs are pretty solidly held, and it's a part of their identity and their morality. And when you attack their belief, you're attacking them. That's why it makes it very difficult to have this conversation sometimes, is to be able to separate the conversation about marijuana and its prohibition and a person's stand on it versus attacking the person themselves versus, you know, not respecting that person's validity of opinion or viewpoint. And so as we move forward trying to legalize cannabis, trying to end prohibition, let's keep that in mind, that we need to expose the errors in thinking without demonizing the people who are thinking them. And I know I have my Reefer Madness segments and I go off on these people over and over again, but I'm not going off on them to their face. Get my point? When you're talking to him, like, for example, when I'm talking face to face with somebody like Kevin Sabet, I've got a different attitude and a different demeanor than if I was slamming him on the show, covering one of his rants on something. Because when you're face to face with a person, a lot of different rules of politeness and cordiality apply. And if again, this is something that I bring from Rick Steves, the travel author, who always said, you know, be the kind of pothead people can't help but like. And that's always something I try to embody as well when I'm out in public, is to be likable and cheerful and enjoyable. And I kind of know that I've got this target on my back now that I'm Radical Russ, right? I'm the pot guy. So that when I'm out in public, I kind of act as if I always think people are watching me. Like at any moment, if I were to do something wrong, they'd say, see, the pot guy. See what pot does to you? Pot, pot, pot. Ha, ha, ha. I don't want to become that example. I don't want to become that guy that can be used as a negative stereotype. So it might be something that you, as marijuana reformers, the more public you become, that you start thinking about as well. Like, you can't be the guy who just casually litters somewhere. I mean, you shouldn't be anyway. But now that you're a marijuana reformer and now that you're identified as that, what you do does not necessarily get painted just on you personally. It gets painted on the entire movement as well. You casually litter, they think, see, potheads, they're all sloppy, they're all in, you know, whatever, and they start to associate things with all of us. So don't make it harder for the rest of us. Try to be the kind of person that people are going to like, that the mainstream is going to like. Now, there's that attitude, and then there's also the attitude of, I'm going to let my freak flag fly, do whatever I want to do. That's fine, too. But again, the more that you conflate that with the marijuana legalization movement, the more that you have to consider whether or not it's helping, whether or not you're being a team player, or whether or not you are adding to some of the problems and the stereotypes that we all have to deal with. So being a marijuana legalizer means, at least in my opinion, that you have to achieve a higher standard. You have to set the bar a little bit higher. We want to be better than the drunks. We want to be better than the cigarette smokers. We want to be the kind of people that are seen as being very accommodating and helpful and willing to work with reasonable regulations and reasonable restrictions and limits. You know, all we ask for is the same rights that beer drinkers have, the same right that cigarette smokers have. But you don't want to be one of those sloppy drunk beer drinkers either. You don't want to be one of those rude cigarette smokers that blows smoke in people's face. Neither should you be the kind of pothead that people stereotype and demean and make the rest of us look bad. I've often brought up this point that when we're talking about legalization and when you're looking at legalization from our opponent's side, that they're seeing what I call the tip of the iceberg of legalization. They're seeing just those few people at the very tip of the iceberg who can be open and honest about who they are. People with artistic jobs, people with, you know, low-wage entry-level jobs, or people with professional or self-employed jobs where they don't have to pee in a cup. Those are the kind of people that can be out and proud about their marijuana use and their being a part of the marijuana movement, trying to end prohibition, because no one's taking their pee, no one's going to fire them for being that person. But the vast majority of us that are using cannabis, and a lot of the people that are a part of this movement to end prohibition, are below that waterline. We're below that public level where you can see who we are. We're the plumbers and the teachers and the cops and the firemen and everybody of any profession that you can think of, all ages, male, female, young, old, black, white, Republican, conservative, liberal, whatever. We're there, all of us. There is someone in that group that smokes pot that you don't know about. I mean, there's 26 million of us smoking pot every year. There are 16.5 million of us, almost 17 million of us, smoking pot every month. Can't all be me and John and Calico and Brian. It's got to be some people out there that you're not suspecting that are out there smoking pot, keeping it hidden from you. And we will be here to continue to bring this education, because I've always said that that sunlight's the best disinfectant here, to borrow someone else's phrase. Sunlight's the best disinfectant for this stupid war on drugs. And the education is starting to sink in. We are starting to see people in majorities now agreeing that marijuana is safer than alcohol. We are starting to see in majorities now that marijuana can be treated and regulated and taxed like alcohol, like cigarettes, that it would be a much more sensible solution to be carding kids and having regulated distributors and some sort of control and inspection over the production of marijuana. Everybody's starting to see the sense of it, and that's because the education, year after year after year, going all the way back to 1971 when Keith Straub founded Normal, with the first group to come out and start telling the truth about marijuana, and that's what we're doing right here at National Cannabis Radio. We will be here 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, 365 days a year, barring technical difficulties. But we will be here as much as we can be here to continue to bring you this truth, to bring you this growing truth about cannabis. And that's what it really means to be a marijuana legalizer, is to be educated, dedicated, to be persistent. You're going to hear no a whole lot. You're going to get doors slammed in your face. And depending on the state you're in, it could be even worse than that. I'm telling you, being us legalizers here in Oregon, we got it easy. It's those guys down in Texas that are marching, those guys down in Georgia that are marching for an end to prohibition, that really need our help. And you can help us help them. Get involved with the National Cannabis Coalition at nationalcannabiscoalition.com or ncc420.com. You can text the word RUSS to 420-420, and that'll connect you with all of our mailing lists and give you an opportunity to donate to this show. This show is by, for, and about the cannabis community. We're all about bringing your stories to the main media, to the mainstream media, to all the people that want to hear them. We're going to keep bringing those stories. I had to talk to a guy from Texas that I marched with just the other day who got popped for growing 19 plants. That's a big-time jail felony in Texas. He's probably not going to see the outside world for a long time. They are the people we're fighting for. They are the people whose stories we will continue to bring you here on National Cannabis Radio. Thank you for being a part of it. Thank you for supporting us, because your support makes it possible. Join us. You can find my blog at RadicalRust.com to get all the latest stories and the downloads of this podcast and the subscription feeds for all of our shows. For Wiz Calico and Ganja John, Brian the Red and Cannabis Carry, I'm Radical Russ. Thanks for joining us here. Stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. We'll take your calls at 971-533-7111. We'll be hanging out and having a good time. And until next time, take care of each other, Tokers. We love.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke.